It's Van der Gag who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamore captain, Mitchell Van der Gag.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Hullamore are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who are wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay, maybe Buster at some point, and Joe McKelvey will look back on what's been a disappointing week on the park. Two defeats, one to Partick Thistle and one to Kilmarnock. We'll discuss the departure of Louis Moult to Preston North End, potential arrivals during the January transfer window, and also look ahead to festive fixtures against Dundee and Rangers. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers. Cheers.
Jay, as always, I'll start with yourself, and we'll look back on, firstly, the Saturday's game and the 1-0 defeat to Kilmarnock. I wasn't there myself. Having been at the two games that went before, I wasn't too surprised to see us come out in the end of a disappointing result. But I'm led to believe the performance was certainly encouraging at stages anyway.
Yeah, I mean, inadvertently, we seem to have had a rotation system the last few games. I didn't make Hearts and Thistle, and you made it quite clear that those were particularly poor performances. So I went along to Rugby Park on Saturday. Buster was there, as was Joe. Perhaps expecting, you know, maybe a wee bit of pessimism. I think when we did the podcast last week, I think we'd kind of universally agreed that 4 points out of the Thistle and Kilmarnock game should be the objective. So to get hammered in that first half at Fir Hill and then go into this game at Rugby Park against a team who seemed to be making progress under Steve Clark, I don't want to say I was fearing the worst, but it certainly took on a different kind of looking of a more difficult challenge than it appeared maybe when we recorded last week. But that said, I thought we were encouraging for spells, probably long spells. I think the stats kind of suggest it was quite an even game. I tend to side with it. I think we deserve to have won the game. I mean, we met one of the Kelly boys after the game in the Tartan Sheep, and the opening line to him when he came into the pub was, "How the hell did Motherwell not win that?" So from a Kilmarnock point of view, they you know, perceive the 3 points as very, very lucky. At the very least, we deserved a point. I thought, interestingly enough, that it was Biggie and Tanner who were our best players, you know, two guys who have struggled to maybe get a lot of first-team football or at least to get starts under Robinson, and yet I thought both of them were our best players in the park. The more they were the creative players, they were the ones actually making things happen. A lot of what we did came either directly or indirectly thanks to those two players. George Newell, when he came off the bench, gave us a real good sort of burst of energy. He looked an exciting player. I know he's obviously showed in flashes early on in the season that he might have something to offer. But, you know, he almost changed the game when he came on. He gave us a different type of option up front. And even at that stage, I think, you know, you're looking for at least a point. So to come away with nothing was disappointing. And I suppose it's one of those ones where there's two ways of looking at it. You either look at it in the context of the run we're in which case it's a poor result that keeps a really bad run going. Or you look at it in isolation and that it was an encouraging 90 minutes that we definitely should have taken something from.
Joe, the objective certainly on here was 4 points out of 6. I thought there was every chance that if we performed to the levels that we have shown at times this season, then there was no reason why we couldn't take all 6 points, to be fair. But the end result, 0 points. And what kind of concerns me is, I think you look at the Thistle game in isolation, you had the possibility there of going 15 points clear of Thistle, and I would have said that at that point we would have been clear, there would have been no danger that Thistle could have at any point clawed it back. And still, at 9 points, I think it'll be a monumental task facing Alan Archibald's team to get back close to Motherwell in the table just now. But 9 points doesn't seem as secure. And then, obviously, Kilmarnock go in and they draw ever closer to us as well. They're certainly in an up just now. Steve Clark's gotten them producing the results. I don't know quite what the performances have been like, but we're now looking over our shoulders somewhat, when earlier on in the season I think we were accumulating the points pretty quickly and things were looking rosy. We were looking at top six, and even there was whispers and murmurings that we could challenge for Europe.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the last few weeks have seen the things take a twist a bit. Obviously, Kilmarnock have got a bit of form, and also Hearts, as well as their fantastic result at the weekend there. They're now unbeaten in six games, as well as a few draws there. St Johnstone beating Rangers at the weekend, gathering a bit of momentum. These are all teams around us that we were kind of happy to have our noses in front of in earlier parts of the season. But one point from 15 since the cup final, and that being against Celtic in a game where you certainly wouldn't have banked for any points, as a slight concern. I mean, I haven't been at as many games as I normally am this season, but I was there at Partick on Wednesday night and I was at Kilmarnock on Saturday, and the thing that concerned me about both of those games pretty much was the lack of creativity at points. And the fact that we just without Moat, we looked kind of like we weren't going to score. The lineup on Saturday, I thought, really lacked width, but I think that was maybe forced upon Robinson with Cadden being out and with Freer also being injured, which was a really big miss, because over the 90 minutes against Partick, the player that I said would have come out looking good was Elliot Freer. He was the only player that started the game for me that managed to have a consistently good 90 minutes. Tanner and Big Romana coming on off the bench in that game and starting at Kilmarnock were certainly our better players. But I think, if anything, we've started the season with this back three where Robinson's made this dogged, hard-to-beat physical. And that's all well and good when you have a guy like Moat who's got a record of turning bad balls into good balls to score goals, good at scoring from set pieces, and then you've got the likes of Peter Hartley, who's obviously got three goals so far from being in and around the box at set pieces. You take those two out of the team, arguably, I know it seems a bit strange saying this about a centre-half, but arguably two of our biggest goal threats this season. I know Bowman's in seven as well, but if you take those out of the team and we are really struggling for goals. The times that I thought over the past two games that we did look like doing things, creating things, was when the likes of Big Romana and Tanner, as we've said, were on the ball and were operating. And I think playing the way we did with the battlers before, with the sort of the fighting spirit and the likes of Rose, Campbell and McHugh, three sort of not creative-minded players in the middle of the park, you could put Grimshaw into that category as well. I think without a striker like Moat, we may struggle to be creative there. So I think that's what Robinson needs to look at now, is over the past 135 minutes, if you like, the 1.5 games, how Tanner's had an influence and how Big Romana's had an influence. And I think he needs to look at those two players who can put their foot in the ball, that can be creative, that can pass the ball, and try and look at a model that fits them into the team. I thought our shape was very good against Partick Thistle in the second half, but it was just unfortunate it took us going three goals down in order to change the shape to look good. Partick didn't really cause us many problems after we went to four at the back, which makes me think, had we done more homework and started with four at the back, it might not have been that three goal deficit at half time.
Jay, the thing about December, and this is quite often the case, that the fixtures come thick and fast. It's also been very unfortunate that it's coincided with our first spell of injuries. I think we've really experienced in the last maybe season and a half, we've been quite lucky that most of our star players have remained fit. That hasn't been the case in recent weeks, where you lose Peter Hartley, you lose Trevor Carson, Louis Moll, Chris Cadden, and then again, Elliot Freer was added to that list as well. And for Saturday's game, that's a huge loss. A very difficult task to replace one or two of your big players, but to lose five at the same time is quite startling and very, very difficult for the management team, I would imagine.
No, that's it. I mean, there's not a team in the division, I think, that could cope with losing, you know, that many vital, vital players. We're not just talking about, you know, first team players. We're talking about the guys who, you know, are without doubt your first names on the team sheet. So if you know, even if Celtic lost, you know, four or five of the very first names on their team sheet, their whole team takes on a completely different dynamic. The opposition grows in confidence because they know that they're suddenly a bit more beatable. I mean, you know, it's such a massive, I don't think we can underestimate, you know, just how big a part the sort of the injury crisis, if you like, has played in these last couple of weeks. We all knew it was going to be a difficult December. I think just about every Motherwell fan at the start of this season, particularly after they announced that, you know, the Hearts game was going to get switched, which I think I'm correct in saying that was meant to be a home game for us, am I right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, particularly when that happened, I think every Motherwell fan looked at December and just went, shit, you know, we're going to have to get some points on the board before that. So to then suffer the injury crisis that we've suffered, it's just, you know, it's really, really difficult. And so I think that we need to keep that in mind. Obviously, there needs to be a bit of a reality check. You know, I don't think anybody's pressing the panic button or anything like that quite yet, but I think there does need to be a big, large dose of reality taken here. The fact that, you know, it was always going to be a really difficult month. And then when you factor in losing the guys that we've lost, you know, the spine of your team, your best players by a country mile, when you take them out of your team, it's going to be massively, massively difficult. And that's just, unfortunately, the nature of the beast. You know, we could, in an alternative universe, we could have went into this, you know, this month fully fit. And who knows what could have happened. We could have taken those 6 points over the last two games you were talking about, Sparta. So unfortunately, that's football. You just need to get on with it. But it's important that if there are lessons to be learned, which I think there definitely are, that Robinson's learning them. You know, we're going to have a difficult January. Moke's obviously away. It still remains to be seen what's going to happen with the likes of Cadden. Is you know, is Cadden going to be here? Who knows? You know, all it'll take is a pretty big bid and, you know, suddenly it's under consideration. You know, the transfer window is going to have its issues for us if there are clubs sniffing about some players. So if the month can bring us some positives, then hopefully it will be that Robinson's been able to see a side that doesn't have guys like Cadden and Moult in it, and he'll be able to identify the problems there, and he'll hopefully be able to, if finances allow, if opportunity allows, hopefully be able to sort of get into the January transfer window now with a more rounded and more knowledgeable kind of idea of what it is he needs to do with this squad to keep things kind of going to the end of the season. Because, you know, as difficult a month as it was going to be, and as difficult as it is to go into these games when they're coming so quickly, when you've got that injury crisis, there have been certain elements over the last couple of games that haven't been acceptable, even for a side that has sort of lost so many vital players. Again, I can't really comment on that Thistle game because I wasn't there. But going 3-0 down in the way that we seem to have done through listening to Graham Barnstable and Lewis Irons, listening to the 8-1-0 commentary, and obviously talking to guys like yourselves who were at the game, it's not acceptable, regardless of whether you've got you know, Louis Moult there or not, Cadden there or not. To go and give a team like Partick Thistle a 3-goal lead by half-time just isn't acceptable. So hopefully there are lessons being learned, and hopefully the management team know exactly how they're going to approach not just the Dundee and Rangers and Hamilton Accies games, but also January, you know, because it's going to be a massive, massive month for us now. We don't have as many games as we have done in the past, with obviously the winter break, but how we respond to Louis Moult leaving and how we approach the January transfer window could now be massive, because I think there'll be a few lessons learned about a lot of the players in our squad.
Joe, one thing for me that stood out, I know we've got injuries, but that does present opportunities for a few guys to step up and make their mark. a few that have actually been in the team most of the season, and I know I always stress I don't want to single out individuals, but I've been quite disappointed in a few. One being the captain just now, Carroll McHugh, I think has very much struggled through most part of the season, and again I thought he was very susceptible to at least one of the goals that for Hill on the Wednesday night, and just below par performances are becoming quite a regular thing for Carroll. The confidence doesn't seem to be quite there just now, and certainly he's not the player that we were seeing regularly last week, and what albeit was a poorer side, I guess.
Certainly. I mean, last season, in the few games at the start of the season in the League Cup and things, I thought, look, we've got a player in their hands here. And then obviously the concussion happened, and then when he came back into the side last season, as you say, into a poorer side, he looked a total standout, and then he played out of position, and he done a sterling job there. And without his performances at centre half last season, I don't think we'd have stayed in the division. The thing that got me about his performance at Firhill was, there is part of me that still thinks that playing at centre half is his best position. He has played most of his career at centre half, if you look at the stats. It was only in his final season at Plymouth that he came, Derek Adams, the manager it was, that kind of ushered him into a defensive midfield role. But before that, he was always playing centre-half. So there is part of me that does think that's maybe where he is most natural playing, although he sees himself playing in midfield. Playing in the middle of the back three that started the game at Partick Thistle really had me thinking it wasn't going to go well early on. The thing that got me, though, was I thought that Kypre's positioning in that game could have been better. Obviously, a raw boy like Kypre's shown great strength and great promise this season. He's going to make mistakes. There's going to be times where he doesn't have fantastic games. But I thought the errors that McHugh was making in the first half at Partick Thistle seemed to be when he was getting dragged out to the right-hand side in an area where Kypre would have been. And it seemed like for a captain to me, obviously, it's very difficult sitting in the stand to get the whole picture of what's been said and what instructions are going there. But for a captain to me, it seemed like he was very passive when that was happening. I didn't see like him sort of bawling at Kypre to get him back in position or anything. And on Saturday, McHugh's performance wasn't amazing again, but I wouldn't have said that he'd done a great deal wrong on Saturday, apart from a few stray passes. And there was a couple of times I noticed that he went for the same ball as Tate once, he went for the same ball as Big Romana. So what it looks like there is, it's perhaps not a guy out of form in the footballing sense, but perhaps confidence in his head is leading him to make wrong decisions. And I don't know whether, if we do get a full complement of players back, if we get Peter Hartley back at the heart of the defence, and there's maybe a kind of rotation where we've obviously got Grimshaw, Rose, Campbell, Big Romana, who can all play centre midfield. So maybe if a couple of weeks out of the team wouldn't be a devastating thing for the team, and might help Carroll kind of regain some form, because it says he certainly has been below par from what I've seen of late, and hopefully we would like to see the player from last season again at SAP.
Jay, how much of a burden is the captaincy, or how much do you think the burden of being the captain has had in Carroll McHugh? Because it certainly almost feels like a direct link from the player last season to the player that's now the captain, and there's been a direct effect in his form in a negative sense. Do you think that's also part of it? Maybe the expectation levels were that bit higher as well after a very good first season at Firth Park. And again, I think it is quite important when you think about how poorly the team were playing. It only really took a 6 out of 10 or a 7 out of 10 to be a good player in that team, because it was that bad at spells last season. But he certainly looked a lot better than what he's shown so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, the whole captaincy thing, I mean, you know, that's a question solely for Carroll McHugh. It's not something that personally I would think should be too much of a burden. I certainly wouldn't necessarily link it to poor performance by any means. It seems like a perfectly, you know, confident football player. I don't think it's the kind of thing that would suddenly phase him or suddenly see a drastic drop in form because he's wearing the captain's armband. So I don't think that's an issue. I think there's probably, I mean, it's one that, like most things in football, there could be a bit of a list of reasons. You know, I think that the main one for me is perhaps, you know, like you've said, I think that when you're kind of drafted in to centre half to kind of piece together a makeshift, you know, back line alongside the likes of Joe Chalmers and Zach Jules to grind out enough points to keep you in the division while playing the long ball game and absolutely shit-fest in games, then, yeah, I think perhaps you are going to stand out, and then the expectation levels are going to be that you're going to, you know, absolutely breeze player of the year the next year. Suddenly he's surrounded by better players, and not just better players, but in a different system that perhaps he's used to playing. But in saying that, I think that the very fact we're having this conversation shows that it was those expectation levels that I think are the main issue. I don't necessarily think Carol McHugh has had a drastically poor season. I don't think that he's you know, been poor by any means. He may have been the 6 and 7s out of 10 that you're talking about, and he might have the odd bad game, but I think that he's no really any different than any of our other players, in that, you know, the bit of inconsistency here or there. I mean, Carol McHugh is still relatively young as well. We need to keep that in mind in the grand scheme of things. So I don't necessarily think that he's had a massively poor season. I just think that because the expectation levels were so high, based on what was perceived as, you know, a good season for Carroll last year, whether it was or whether he was just, you know, the best of a bad bunch, who knows? It's all, you know, that's a matter for, you know, that's open to opinion. But at the end of the day, I don't think he's had a particularly poor season. I just think he stands out because people look at him as the captain. They look at him as somebody who had a good season last season, and maybe he's not hitting those heights. So no, I think the very fact we're talking about this suggests that the expectation levels were too high rather than anything else, because I don't think he's been, you know, particularly poorer than anybody else.
We'll move on to the Wednesday night game, and what was very much a game of two halves, very similar actually to the trip to Ross County, where we were 3-0 down at half time and played our way back into the game and possibly came away wondering how we didn't take anything from the match. Joe, we've already discussed the first half hour and how unacceptable the performance was. I think Partick Thistle were only up the park three times and scored every time. Most goals coming from individual errors from ourselves as well, which is possibly doubly frustrating when you're playing a team at the bottom of the league. They're really low in confidence, and you could tell that was the case when we did even get the first goal back. They seem to be rocked, they seem to be nervous, but to hand them a 3-goal advantage is just, it's criminal really. It was a passageway to 3 points for Partick Thistle that they really weren't going to get without our assistance, and that makes it, yeah, that tops off the disappointment, I suppose.
Yeah, it was a disappointing night all in. It's one of those ones that where you get down 3-0 at half time and you think to yourself, this has just been a terrible game of football. We're not getting beaten by a fantastic team here, but we're just down through poor errors. I mean, the first goal, the free kick, I mean, I thought McHugh kind of dived into the challenge pretty naively, you might say. And then I thought the free kick from that area, it should take a free kick that we would still be raving about today, 5 or 6 days later, and talking about how good it was. But it wasn't. It was a reasonably good free kick, and I think that a reasonably good free kick should not be beating your keeper from that angle. I don't want to do, again, we don't really want to single people out, but that was disappointing. Also, the third goal, I think it was McHugh who made the error first of all, that was quite disappointing, and then it looked as if, I don't know whether Campbell dithered or whether he pulled out the challenge as the ball came to, I think it was Connor Salmon, and that was disappointing as well. So you're talking about avoidable stuff, and there were too many players. I thought obviously, at half time, he took off to our central midfielder. But I thought Grimshaw might have considered himself to be slightly unlucky to be taken off. But I thought he was actually, other than Elliot Freer, was our only sort of player who had any sort of good effect on the game in the first half. Albeit that good effect was winning a couple of slide tackles, carrying the ball forward, and it not amounting to much. But we lost it in midfield, and that carried back to a back three who were exposed by a system that didn't really suit who we were playing against. And as I say, what really frustrated me about that was the second half showed me that when we went to a back four, Partick rarely troubled us. They rarely got on the ball. We were in total control. Freer was putting crosses in. It really began to annoy me that it seemed that there was a way to beat Partick Thistle on Wednesday night had we done adequate homework. And there was just, I think it was one of those ones where I think I heard Neil Lennon say at the weekend after Hibs get beaten by Aberdeen that he could have made 11 substitutions at half time. Other than Elliot Freer, I think Robinson could have done the same. Last Wednesday was that kind of performance for us as well. Petrovic started, and other than one sort of wee burst of pace he showed in the first half, I just think he's looked too raw so far. It looks as if he might be a player that if he played six or seven games in a row, he might find his feet. But it's a player like that I don't think in our run of form. I think it's 1 point in 15. I think you can stretch it back to 4 points out of 27 as well. I think if you go a wee bit further back. But in that run of form, we can't afford to be carrying people. We can't afford to be making the naive mistakes we are. But I think that's just something that comes with form and confidence, that we really need a corner to be turned.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. It was a disappointing result. And in the following day, there was more disappointment, I suppose. It felt like it was a bit inevitable. But Louis Moult's move to Preston North End confirmed it looks, for all intents and purposes, Louis played his last game for the club. And Jay, of course, there's going to be, you'll look back in the 50 goals that Louis scored for the club, a fantastic impact he's made in 2.5 seasons. Easily has become a club legend in that short time. Not for just his goals and his performances on the park, but also his conduct off the park, where he's engaged with the fans, he's attended events and charity stuff that has went well over and above actually what you would tend to expect of a professional footballer. He's been an absolute credit to himself and the football club. So there was obviously disappointment that he's going to move on and that he's played his last game. But at the same token, it seems on the face of it, certainly a very good deal. We're going to get money for a player that was out of contract in the summer and had already indicated that there was no chance that he was going to sign a new deal with the club. So we make some money, we've got a knock-on clause as well, where should Louis go down and make a real impact, we could make a further kick-on down the line. And it possibly is round about the right time for Louis and Motherwell to go their separate ways.
Oh yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, when we brought him in, first and foremost, like we would do with any player in that same sort of mould, you know, as part of our sort of business model, I think it would have been a case of the vision would have been sold to Louis Moult that he'd be here for a year, possibly 18 months, and if he did well, then we would sell him. So the fact that we got 2.5 years out of him, I think, is far more than we would ever have thought in the first place. Obviously, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I don't think anybody quite expected, you know, Louis Moult when we signed him, particularly because he was behind Wes Fletcher in the pecking order to begin with. I don't think anybody quite expected to get the return that we did. But it just shows you that the model that's in place at Fir Park can work and can work very, very well. And you're right, I think now is the right time. Would it be nice to get the full season out of him? Absolutely, but let's be honest. You know, in a year or 2 years, 3 years, is it really going to be worth it? You know, obviously, it's one of these things where you can debate all day. Nobody really knows the answer. We'd have no idea where we would finish with Louis Moult and where we would finish without him. We don't know how much money it's going to cost us. You know, we don't know whether you would have got another cup run if Lewemote was there, but we'll crash out against Aki's in January now that he's not. You know, it's all completely hypothetical. It's all about trying to weigh up, you know, the risks, the pros with the cons. You know, is that offer good enough that it's possibly going to be better than what you would get, or the difference that Lewemote would make in the long run? And the club have obviously decided it is. And it's a great, great offer, a great, great deal to get for a player who could have signed or would have signed for Preston on a pre-contract anyway. To get as much as we did, I think, is actually really impressive, and I think the club needs to be commended for that. But you're right in what you say. I mean, the man is an absolute class act. You just even need to watch his interview after the news was announced. And it's just, you know, 6 minutes of absolute class, particularly nowadays when you've got things like social media and stuff like that. I mean, we said last week, I think Dom Thomas got named in the podcast last week, but you just need to, you know, compare Lewemote to somebody like Dom Thomas, you know, somebody who's never actually made it in the game and yet thinks he's the big I am. And then you've got somebody like Lewemote who is going to now go and play in the Championship for a club who are still, I would imagine, got aspirations for reaching the playoffs. You know, they're still, you know, I think it's something like 3 or 6 points behind a playoff place at this early stage in the season. So there's absolutely no reason why they can't be pushing for the playoffs. And knowing what Lewemote can do in terms of putting the ball in the net, I don't think any Motherwell fan would be particularly surprised if Lewemote goes down there and his goals make the difference, and suddenly you're watching Lewemote in a playoff semi or possibly final by the end of the season, and then suddenly Moat could be playing in the Premiership. And yet, I can guarantee you, he would still be one of the most down-to-earth, sort of generous, sort of you know, genuine guys on the planet. He is just an absolute class act from start to finish. And I think you can just see that for the reaction for all the Motherwell fans. You go to Twitter, Facebook, so you know, all the forums, and it's just good wishes after good wishes. You know, normally in these circumstances, it will be a case of, you know, all right, okay, thanks for everything, and move on. But I think there is genuine, heartfelt affection both ways. You just even need to look at the fact that Lewemote will sit there and reply to every single tweet he's ever received. And I would imagine that over the last week or two, he's received far more than he ever has, and yet there he is, still replying to every single one individually. So he's made a massive, massive mark at Motherwell. You just need to actually look at the reaction from some Wrexham fans who still kind of comment now and again on social media to see that he's made a massive impact there. And I think that, you know, every Motherwell fan will be keeping close tabs on him to watch as he'll hopefully go down and make a massive impact down at Preston as well.
And Joe, the real challenge now for Stephen Robinson is to fill that Lewemote-shaped hole in the team. A player that's contributed so many goals to the cause, and at times won his games that without Lewemote we wouldn't have won. So it's a real challenge, isn't it? But I suppose the redeeming factor and the positive here is that we've got the whole transfer window. The deal's been done. Lewemote will become a Preston player on New Year's Day. We have the duration of the transfer window and half of December to try and bring in a replacement and somehow cope with life without Lewemote.
Well, the encouraging thing for me is that were Robinson in the summer signed, I think it was round about the 16 or 17 players, and as soon as kind of the transfer window opened in June, they seemed to be like a steady flow of signings, if you like. So that tells me that if there is going to be scope for Robinson to replace Lewemote in the budget, that I'm sure he has the wheels in motion already in order to try and kind of get that going, get his targets identified and go from there. It will be a massive loss, and whoever that we do bring in to replace him won't have the impact that Lewemote has right away. But I mean, you're kind of looking for someone, I think, that's going to kind of bridge the gap between having Lewemote and kind of getting by without him. But as you and Jay have said there, he's a total class act of a player and of a guy. I can't think of the last time where a departure was met with such sort of disappointment from the fans in terms that he's not going to be playing for us anymore, but wishing the guy well in the future. I think there's so many players who have made an impact in the club, and who even players who haven't made an impact in the club who have left in a manner lacking class in the past. And I mean, I just think that there is a way to outgrow a football club. There is a way to leave a football club. And if anyone wants any tips on how to conduct themselves on the park, off the park, whether they're at a club, and also conduct themselves in leaving a club, then they certainly should look no further as to how Louis Moak has handled this. I mean, I can think of so many times over the past 2.5 years where this year, to an extent, obviously we've taken a bit of dip in form since he's been out of the team, but this year, to an extent, he's been playing on a team that's been getting results on board and doing well recently. But if you take back his two full seasons at the club, his first season at the club, we certainly made the top six in the end, but it was a late march to it. And last season was certainly a classic by no means. But the amount of times Louis digged his out of the hole, you think of the late equaliser at Accies in December, the late winner at Accies at the end of the season, the David United 4 against Accies. So many goals last season. And so many times it was him sort of digging us out, even in the game, like penultimate game of the season against Kilmarnock when we ensured our safety, a fantastic assist for Elliot Freer that night. The effort, the work rate, and just the passion he's had for everything he's done when he's been at Motherwell means that I think it'll be a while before we see his like again in all regards.
And just a final one, I know we do have strikers at the club just now, Alex Fisher, Ryan Bowman, George Newell spring to mind just straight off the bat. Personally, I don't think that we've got the personnel just now that would manage to keep us going in terms of scoring enough goals without Louis Moult. Do you think that a replacement in January is a pivotal move?
I think we said last week we had a bit of an in-depth chat on the podcast about Fisher and Bowman and whether, you know, they are the goal scorers that Moult is. And I think that we're actually seeing, particularly during these last few weeks, that they're not. They're probably quite similar players. I think that point was made last week in the podcast as well. George Newell, as I said earlier, I think actually really impressed me on Saturday. A completely different type of player. Went close with an opportunity in the second half. Whether he, you know, has the ability and the consistency and the mentality to kind of be the focal point and a replacement for Louis Moult remains to be seen. He's still a young lad and you don't want to start putting that kind of pressure on him. But I go back to what I said earlier, you know, this month, if there's anything to take from this month and this poor run, it's hopefully that the management team will have learned lessons and will have a better, a sort of a more concise idea of what they want to do in January. And I'd be very surprised if what the last few weeks have shown is that we kind of do need to go and replace Louis Moult, because I think, you know, the void has been so blatantly obvious. You look at some of the chances we created at Rugby Park with Louis Moult, scored one or two of those. I think, you know, that he probably would have. You know, I think a difficult argument to make that someone with the record of Louis Moult wouldn't have scored, you know, Tanner's chance or one of Fisher's efforts or maybe even Newell's effort in the second half. So, yeah, I think if there's anything we're learning so far in this poor, poor run, I think it is that when Louis Moult goes, we need to look at sort of a replacement. You know, if Fisher had banged in the goals, or Bowman had banged in the goals this month, or Newell had maybe netted on Saturday, then perhaps you could start to think, well, maybe we've got a replacement here. But at the moment, it doesn't look like it. And unless one of those guys, you know, hits a really good bit of form over the next couple of games and bags a couple of goals over Christmas and New Year, then I think we need to be looking at a replacement.
We'll quickly look ahead to, we'll do Saturday's game. I don't think there's any point of us jumping to the 28th of December and the fixture at Ibrox, but or the 27th, whenever the game is. Someone check, please. The game on Saturday, though, is vital as far as I'm concerned, Joe. The results have been very poor throughout this month so far. Dundee, a team struggling at the foot of the table, although they get a very good result against Partick Thistle on Saturday, something that we hadn't managed to do only 3 days beforehand. That being said, Dundee at home is a fixture that we should be looking to win, regardless of our poor form. And it's a game, despite the fact that we're in a sticky spell, I expect us to go out with a positive mindset and come away with the 3 points.
Absolutely. It's a must win for me. It might sound strange considering where we were last season. We've just dropped out of the top six this weekend with a game in hand, etc. It's just the fact that, as I say, I think it's 4 points out of the last 27 for us at the minute. And if we don't take full points from Dundee at home, you're then looking at two games before the January split, which is Rangers at Ibrox, which, as much as St Johnstone fans might tell you otherwise, that is going to be a tricky tie for us, especially with our record there. And then a local derby against Hamilton Accies, which these are quite tense encounters, which can go either way, albeit we had the upper hand last season. So I wouldn't want us to be going into the Rangers game at Ibrox without a win behind us, and I wouldn't want us to kind of then go into the Accies game with not having won those two games. Certainly the Dundee game at home anyway, as you say, regardless of form or anything, it's a game we should be looking to win. They haven't really been firing on all cylinders this season. A couple of good results against Partick, one against Rangers a while back, but they really have been quite few and far between for them. So I really think it's one that we should be looking to take 3 points. I really hope that we have one of, if not both, Cadden and Freer back. I think that's vital to our chances of creativity at the weekend. Having watched Bowman and Fisher the past couple of weeks, the past couple of games, so obviously Fisher didn't play against Partick, we're watching the two of them play together at Rugby Park. I don't think they're the answer in terms of a partnership. There was one point where Tate was looking to cross the ball and both of them had come short out to the right to try and offer an option there, and you looked up and there was no one in the box where perhaps on a normal Saturday afternoon you would expect to see Mo. Fisher looks like he needs a run of games. Bowman in the past couple of games has looked a bit cumbersome, and it has led me to think that he might be better suited to be in foil for another striker rather than being the main man himself, although you have to take a step back and see that 7 goals so far this season is a very reasonable return. When you think of last season, we considered McDonald to have a good run up front, and I think he only got 9 or 10 goals last season. So you do have to consider that. But I think Newell looked bright when he came on, and I wouldn't be averse to him starting as part of a front two with one of those two players at the weekend if that is how we were going. But if we managed to get some more width in the team and just played Tanner off one of the strikers, I think that would also be a way to go. But Saturday's certainly a game I would like to see us come out, start strongly, and hopefully get some goals and points on the board.
Jay, shouldn't we make any sort of predictions or set any targets, because that didn't work out for us very well last week, did it? But the Dundee at home and Accies at home, That's games we've got to be aspiring to take full points from. And it also is against teams that are fighting it out, scrapping it out at the bottom of the table. We want to put some distance between ourselves and those sides, and then we can look forward to 2018 with a fair bit of enthusiasm, and also with targets for the top six, or at least a very comfortable league placing.
Yeah, I mean, It's a tricky one, because I know what you're saying about not putting targets on and things like that, but I tend to side with Joe with the idea that Saturday in particular is a must win. I think particularly when you factor in the sort of the winter break, which, you know, you could just, I mean, it's Scotland, you know, the very fact that we're having a winter break the first 3 weeks of January and not now when it's like minus 10 just sums up the SFA. They don't really have a clue. But, you know, you're talking about the winter break coming at a time when, if, you know, I don't want to sound too pessimistic, but if it all goes wrong on Saturday and then, like Joe says, we then go to Ibrox and then you've got that game against Accies, you could be going into those 3 weeks after an absolutely horrendous run throughout the month of December, and you've got, like, you know, a lot of time to sit and stew in that, a lot of time to sit and think about it before you even get the chance to put it right against Accies in the Cup. So I tend to side with Joe. I think it's a must win on Saturday, and, you know, it just shows you how quickly things can change. You know, we've went from getting into even a cup final with Celtic full of confidence, thinking that we're going to win it, you're now looking at the two home games that you've mentioned there. Yes, Dundee and Accies are both below us in the table. Yes, they're the kind of teams that are struggling, you know, to stay up. And yet, both of them have looked half decent, particularly in recent weeks. You know, Dundee have just scudded the same team that were beating us 3-0 at half time on Wednesday. And Accies managed to grind out a 3-2 win over Ross County. So, you know, it's certainly not two easy games by any means, even before you factor in the month we've had and the potential injuries that we might still have by then. So it's going to be, you know, particularly, you know, looking to take Saturday first, given, you know, it's the next game. It's going to be a very difficult game, contrary to what I would imagine a lot of people expected, including myself. Neil McCann seems to be making, you know, a slight bit of progress there. And so he'll be bringing a Dundee side fresh off a 3-0 victory to Fir Park on Saturday, looking to take advantage of, you know, a wounded animal, a team that's really, really struggled to get any points this month. So it's going to be a difficult game, but I side with Joe. I think it's a game that we need to win. Again, I kind of agree with Joe as well. I think, as I've said, I think we've both made the point that George Newell looked good when he came on. I think I agree that both Fisher and Bowman don't really work together as a partnership. So I would like to see either Fisher or Bowman partner Newell on Saturday if we decide to go two up front. Biggie and Tanner need to start because they have been, from what you guys have said, they were the, you know, the difference at Fir Hill, and they were certainly the better players in the park on Saturday. But if we could play the way we did on Saturday, get a bit of luck and actually start to put the ball in the net, then it is a game that we should win. But it's going to be difficult, and if we don't win it, then that's when you have to start thinking that things really are starting to struggle.
Well, guys, I don't know whether we will be back for a recap of the Dundee game and to look ahead to the Rangers game, but we'll leave previewing Rangers for now. Bustard,
nobody wants to talk about the Rangers anyway.
we want to talk about their game on Saturday, but we are unfortunately in bad form as well, so it's not really appropriate. Buster was meant to join us. I think he's been caught up in a call at work, so he's not. He works as a call girl, by the way. So he's not made it tonight. But guys, thank you very much for your time.
Cheers.
Cheers, the Spartan.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. If we're not back before then, have yourselves a fantastic Christmas. We'll be back some point in the next week or so. Until then, thank you and goodbye. All the lights are coming on.